Is your vehicle stopping like it should? Does it squeal or grind when you brake? Don't miss out on summer brake deals at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
How do you start the show when you feel a sneeze coming on? Welcome, it's Eric Erickson here across the nation. The phone number, 877-973-7425. If you want to be on the program, delighted to have you. We will get to Jamal Bowman. Laughing's not, it's not forced, I promise. I'm seeing this as I'm scrolling Twitter as I just started. There are the flashing warning signs around Metro Atlanta on the interstate. Greg Bluestein, a reporter of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, just put this up. Thursday, Atlanta events, heavy delays expected, major events. Y'all, it's going to be a disaster where I live. You can, if you don't live in anywhere near Atlanta, you can praise God that on Thursday you will not have the U.S. Olympic soccer team and two presidents of the United States all at the same time. And not only that, I've been telling people you can listen for the traffic updates, but now I'm being told that not only will the helicopters be grounded after 2 p.m., they turn off all the cameras so you can't really see where the presidential motorcade. It's going to be a disaster. Essentially, if you live in Atlanta, Georgia, stay home on Thursday. It's going to be like Snowpocalypse, except it's going to be two white old men. You want to avoid being anywhere near Atlanta on Thursday if you can help it, unless you're traveling through the airport. And even then, you're going to have two presidents landing, so there will be ground stops at the air. It's just going to be a disaster. Absolute disaster. We're going to be finding bodies 5 weeks from now. They got stranded on I-75 as the presidential motorcade went past and couldn't get home to use the bathroom, and they exploded. It's going to be a disaster. All right, welcome. It is Eric Erickson. The phone number 877-973-7425. We will get to Jamal Bowman. However, first, we must get to the United States Supreme Court. You know, for all of the complaints and outrage about the Supreme Court being this wildly, wildly anti-democratic, vast right-wing conspiracy, they've now sided unanimously on the abortifacient drug issue. They unanimously decided Donald Trump can be on the ballot in states. And they have now 6-3 decided that the attorneys general who sued over internet content moderation lacked the standing to sue the Biden administration. It's kind of a big deal. Now, I will tell you that the right is melting down over the decision. Jonathan Turley on Fox News minces no words.
This is one of the most fundamental issues that we are facing. I wrote about this issue, this case, in my recent book, because you have one of the largest censorship systems in our history, if not the largest. It's been called Orwellian by lower court judges. And what the court is saying is that we won't hear you on this issue because you're not the right litigants. Now, I have to admit, I've always been something of a standing dove. I believe that these standing decisions are too narrow because they do prevent the court from rendering a decision on such important constitutional questions. So this issue will have to wait for another day. But one of the things that many of us have been arguing for years is that the government is engaging in censorship by surrogate. I testified about this in Congress. That
now, he's not wrong. In fact, I think Sam Alito's, he dissented, and I think Sam Alito actually gets it right. The case is Murthy versus Missouri that went to the U.S. Supreme Court. And I think, so Amy Coney Barrett and John Roberts, Brett Kavanaugh, Elena Kagan, Sonia Sotomayor, and Ketanji Brown Jackson were in the majority. Alito, Thomas, and Gorsuch dissented. Let me read you from the dissent. This case involves what the district court termed a far-reaching and widespread censorship campaign conducted by high-ranking federal officials against Americans who expressed certain disfavored views about COVID-19 on social media. Victims of the campaign, perceived by the lower courts, brought this action to ensure that the government did not continue to coerce social media platforms to suppress speech. Among these victims were two states whose public health officials were hampered in their ability to share their expertise with state residents, distinguished professors of medicine at Stanford and Harvard, a professor of psychiatry at the University of California Irvine School of Medicine, the owner and operator of a news website, and Jill Hines, the director of a consumer and human rights advocacy organization. All these victims simply wanted to speak out on a question of the utmost public importance. To protect their right to do so, the district court issued a preliminary injunction. If the lower court's assessment of the voluminous record is correct, this is one of the most important free speech cases to reach this court in years. Freedom of speech serves many valuable purposes, but its most important role is protection of speech that is essential to democratic self-government, and speech that advances humanity's store of knowledge, thought, and expression in fields such as science, medicine, history, the social sciences, philosophy, and the arts. The speech at issue falls squarely in those categories. It concerns the COVID-19 virus, which has killed more than a million Americans. Our country's response to the COVID-19 pandemic was and remains a matter of enormous medical, social, political, geopolitical, and economic importance, and our dedication to a free marketplace of ideas demands that dissenting views on such matters be allowed. The record before us is vast. It contains evidence of communications between many different government actors and a variety of internet platforms, as well as evidence regarding the effects of those interactions on the seven different plaintiffs. With the inquiry focused in this way, here is what the record plainly shows. For months in 2021 and 2022, a coterie of officials at the highest levels of the federal government continuously harried and implicitly threatened Facebook with potentially crippling consequences if it did not comply with their wishes about the suppression of certain COVID-19 related speech. Not surprisingly, Facebook repeatedly yielded. As a result, Hines was indisputably injured, and due to the officials' continuing efforts, she was threatened with more of the same when she brought suit. These past and threatened future injuries were caused by and traceable to censorship that the officials coerced, and the injunctive relief she sought was an available and suitable remedy. Now, first, social media has become a leading source of news for many Americans. Internet platforms, although rich and powerful, are at the same time far more vulnerable to government pressure than other news sources. For these and other reasons, internet platforms have a powerful incentive to please important federal officials. So he goes on. It's a very lengthy dissent. And what you've got to understand about this is, let me just read you the very conclusion of Amy Coney Barrett's decision. There were no concurrences, you should note, among the majority. There were six of them, three conservatives, the more moderate conservative ones, and the three progressive justices. And she concludes this, the plaintiffs, these are the injured parties who claim to have been censored, without any concrete link between their injuries and the defendant's conduct, ask us to conduct a review of the years-long communications between dozens of federal officials across different agencies with different social media platforms about different topics. This court's standing doctrine prevents us from exercising such general legal oversight of the other branches of government. We therefore reverse the judgment of the Fifth Circuit and remand the case for further proceedings consistent with this opinion. I want to say a couple of things here about this case. This is, I think, more a signal that a majority of the Supreme Court is exhausted by the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals in the same way they're exhausted by the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. My suspicion is that had a different circuit issued the decision, they might have taken it more suspiciously or more seriously. That's just my suspicion. I don't know for sure, but that's my guess. I also need to reemphasize that the court's not weighing in on whether or not the government can coerce. In fact, there's well-settled law that the government cannot coerce the private sector to do what the government cannot do. So it is actually fairly settled law that the government of the United States cannot impose on a private company to censor things the government itself is not able to censor, which is the problem, because that's what happened here. And so it's a cop-out from the six of the majority of the Supreme Court to say, well, these individuals don't have standing. They're too far removed from any hypothetical injuries. If Facebook got pressured, Facebook should be the one to sue. That's essentially their argument. Bad argument. I think the minority here gets it right. The larger issue here, though, is that we've been told this is an extremist, out-of-control Supreme Court. And here are three conservatives and three liberals on the Supreme Court together joining forces to say this is a bridge too far, that there is no standing. Now, this is from the synopsis, so you understand the standing issue. That a case or controversy requires a requirement is fundamental to the judiciary. A proper case or controversy exists only when at least one of the plaintiffs establishes that he or she has standing to sue, meaning that he has suffered or will suffer an injury that is concrete, particularized, actual, and imminent, fairly traceable to the challenged action, and redressable by a favored ruling. The one-step removed anticipatory nature of the plaintiff's alleged injuries present two particular challenges here. First, it's a bedrock principle that a federal court can't redress injuries that result from independent action of a third party not before the court. Second, because the plaintiffs request forward-looking relief, they must face a real and immediate threat of a repeated injury. Putting those requirements together, the plaintiff must show a substantial risk that in the near future, at least one platform will restrict the speech of at least one of the plaintiffs in response to actions by at least one government defendant. And they can't show that, really. And honestly, they can't. Standing is a necessary component. It is a cop-out. Let's recognize that. It's a cop-out. But at the same time, it's a legitimate. Standing is a legitimate doctrine. You've got to be have a redressable injury that is personal to you directly by the parties involved in the lawsuit. And in this case, they say not so much, that it's hard to address that particular injury and to claim an immediate threat of future injury. There is no immediate threat of future injury. Now, that's actually a fact. There's you're not going to see an immediate censorship campaign again by the government. The problem here is what the minority puts its finger on, that this could actually happen again. And the only way to stop it from happening again, because the facts aren't really in dispute, the only way to stop it from happening again is to tell the government you can't do this. It should be settled doctrine. The government should not be able to coerce social media companies into censoring people. There's copious documentation that it had. The majority got this case wrong. Oddly enough, while the left is celebrating that, they can't make too much of it because of the Snyder versus United States case that also came up today. They're furious with it. So 18 U.S.C. section 666 prohibits bribery to state and local officials if those governments get federal funds. That's the only way the U.S. government can have a say over bribery at the local level. If your local government gets funds, you can't take bribes. A local mayor gave a contract to a company. That company then thanked the mayor with a monetary payment. The feds sued and said it was a bribe. The evidence in the case shows that the government official had no knowledge of, did not participate in, was not expecting anything. It was just a gratuity to thank him for having given them the contract. The Supreme Court, a 6-3 decision with the conservatives all in the majority and the progressives all in the minority, said that's not a bribe. If he had no knowledge of it, didn't ask for it, didn't seek it, it wasn't planned in any way, shape, or form, there's no evidence it was designed to be distributed to coerce him into giving the contract, that's not a bribe under corruption charges. Therefore, it doesn't apply. The left is upset with that because they're afraid that that could in some way be used to undermine cases against Donald Trump. It's actually a very reasonable decision. And the left is in on the Supreme Court is very outraged by it, claiming all sorts of fallout from it. But the majority made it very clear that if there's no expectation of this money, it's not induced, it's not implied that it needs to come, there's no way, shape, or form that the person making the deal wanted to be paid in any way, shape, or form, then it's not a bribe under federal corruption charges. But again, the left's got to scream about that case because they got to make it about Donald Trump. Two big cases from the court today. The big headline should be we only got two cases from the Supreme Court today. We should have gotten more, which means they're saving all the big cases for the next 2 days in the middle of a presidential debate.
Want to be on the show?
Hello?
I love your show.
Call Eric now at 877-973-7425. Want Eric's weekly recipes? They're super delicious. Text recipe to 33777 now.
Welcome. It is Eric Erickson here. Yes, you can be on the program, 877-973-7425, should you wish to be. I will get to the issues with Jamal Bowman. I got a lot to say on that, but I do actually think we probably do need to note if you're on the left and you're looking for some hope for Joe Biden, you got some signs of it last night. I don't know that I would make as much of it as some are on the left, but you do need to know that on the left, they're noticing that a number of Donald Trump endorsed candidates in congressional races from South Carolina to Colorado to Utah, they lost to more mainstream Republicans. It was very interesting last night, Jamal Bowman losing in New York to a more same happened to a number of candidates on the right in a South Carolina primary, in two Colorado, in South Carolina runoff, two Colorado primaries, the Utah primary. The candidates picked by Donald Trump lost to Republicans, now mainstream Republicans. The notable ones were in Colorado. The Colorado Republican Party has become a genuine clown show. In fact, the chairman of the party lost his primary race last night. He was an incumbent and lost, I believe. He lost. I think he was the incumbent. And the Republican voters of the state decided they would actually like to try to win elections. And they even nominated a man for Congress who claims that Donald Trump lost 2020 and the election was not stolen. And that guy actually is going to win his congressional district probably while the other guy would have lost. At this point, I think people are tired of losing. Now, I got to tell you, you're probably tired of losing in this economy that we've got right now as well. Swiss America wants to help you protect your hard-earned assets with all the craziness happening in the world right now. They've got a report, The Secret War on Cash, that you can read for yourself. They're rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau. They can educate you on your protecting your assets. Now, go get the shocking free report, The Secret War on Cash. By the way, you can check it out on YouTube. Go to SwissAmerica.com/YouTube, SwissAmerica.com/YouTube, and you can see that the head of Swiss America explained to you what's going on, but then you can get the report as well. It takes 15 minutes to read. They sent me a copy of it. It's actually kind of eye-opening. And what you can do is you can call or text my name, Eric, E-R-I-C-K, to 800-289-2646, 800-289-2646. You think I'll go with digital currency, get around it. Not, they're coming for digital currency too. It's all in the report, The Secret War on Cash from Swiss America. Text my name, Eric, to 800-289-2646. Get your completely free copy, 800-289-2646. Message and data rates may apply.
Smart, fearless, and occasionally funny. You're listening to The Eric Erickson Show.
Greetings. Welcome. It is Eric Erickson here across the United States of America. Okay, I gotta, we're far enough into this. I gotta just pull back the curtain and explain my morning to you. So last night, yesterday, I do a lot of radio. I'll get into that in a little while, but I could tell that my earpiece was starting to crackle like it was going bad. So I get in today to connect to the show, talk on the line to Jim. I hear no sound whatsoever. I'm like, oh, the earpiece is bad. I can tell that that sound is going back and forth, but my earpiece is bad. And then I realize, oh, gosh, I don't have any headphones here. So literally there's no way for me to hear the show. So I'm going to have to do everything by the second, staring at the clock the entire show, because I can't hear cues to go to commercial break. I can't hear any audio play, anything like that. It's dead. So I'm like, well, I call my wife, is like, hey, can you grab my headphones and get somebody to bring them down to the office? So at least by 12:30, I can start the show with and have audio that I can hear. Even I got to wear big cans on my ears. Then it dawns on me, you idiot, you've had these break in the past. Why didn't you order extra? So I went on the site where I order them to order some extras and realized, oh, genius, you did order extras. Go find them. So I found the earpiece. Perfect. So great. So I do the whole show. I can hear Jim. Jim can hear me. I can hear the audio I'm playing, all that. Everything works fine. My kid is on the way down here with headphones. Arrives in commercial break. The cord that connects the headphones to the box. The headphones are, you can't use the headphones without the actual cable that physically connects them to the actual audio. There's no audio jack. I don't have the heart to tell them I needed the cable too, but that's okay. Thanks to my wife and kids for scrambling, my wife injuring herself, colliding with the table along the way. All right, we got to get into Jamal, but y'all, this is, it's hilarious to me, this whole situation. Here's what you need to know about Jamal Bowman. And I want to paint a full picture for you about this. In 2020, Elliot Engel was running for re-election, close to 80 years old. Elliot Engel had represented Southern Westchester County in the state legislature and then in the United States Congress. He had won it from a Republican, and he was a fairly moderate Democrat. He was chairman of the House Foreign Affairs Committee. In 2020, Elliot Engel, running for re-election, got attacked by Jamal Bowman, his opponent, claiming that Engel was in the pocket of the Israelis, that he only cared about Israel. He was too tied to the right wing in Israel, and he did not represent the interests of the people of his district. He was far more focused on protecting the interests of Israel than the interests of the people of the 16th Congressional District of New York. Progressives had swept in 2018 with Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, and after 2 years in office, they stretched their legs and they decided they were going to show force in the Democratic primaries. They were going to reshape the Democratic primaries, and they were going to take over the Democratic Party. And they targeted moderate Democrats around the country, entrenched politicians who they thought had gotten soft and weak, and they decided to wage war against them. Elliot Engel was the most prominent, the chairman of the House Foreign Affairs Committee, and they annihilated him, sweeping Jamal Bowman into office. 4 years later, George Latimer runs against Jamal Bowman. Now, contrary to what you may believe from some of the media hysteria, Jamal Bowman was not being attacked aggressively for anti-Semitism. It certainly was there, but Elliot Engel in 2020 took for granted he was going to win re-election given his prominence and his power. He never did oppo research on Jamal Bowman, but Jamal Bowman turned out to be an embarrassment. Jamal Bowman, this was bigger than the anti-Semitism. Jamal Bowman, representing the north end of New York City, the Bronx, was a 9/11 truther. Jamal Bowman supported a vast array of conspiracy theories about what happened on September 11th, and that does not work well with the voters of New York City. Not only that, those weren't the only conspiracy theories. He had some very wackadoo beliefs. Jamal Bowman also did the fire alarm stunt in Congress, which embarrassed his constituents, that a high school principal didn't know how to use a fire escape door. And they began to attack Jamal Bowman for focusing more on San Francisco and Dearborn, Michigan, than focusing on his constituents at home. In fact, it should be noted that members of the media slurred that attack on Jamal Bowman, claiming it was Islamophobic. Members of the media said it was racist of George Latimer to attack Jamal Bowman for focusing on Dearborn and San Francisco and campaigning there and supporting progressives there. The attack actually landed in the same way that Jamal Bowman's attack landed against Elliot Engel in 2020. These attacks landed against Jamal Bowman. It had nothing to do with the virulent anti-Semitism. That was certainly the undercurrent of it. You know what's so ironic is literally George Latimer, his campaign and outside groups attacked Jamal Bowman for being so Jamal Bowman attacked Elliot Engel in 2020 successfully as being a congressman for Israel. George Latimer, his 70-year-old opponent, Bowman's 48, his 70-year-old opponent and outside groups attacked Jamal Bowman for being a congressman for San Francisco and Dearborn, Michigan, not being a congressman of the area. And they were declared to be Islamophobic for saying that. I want to play for you Jamal Bowman's concession speech last night.
I want us to acknowledge publicly together the power of the Muslim community. Y'all could do better than that. You don't understand what the Muslim community specifically did in this race. The Muslim community, from Yonkers to San Francisco to Dearborn, Michigan.
Got that? He actually, I mean, that was an attack on Jamal Bowman. He was more interested in what happened in San Francisco and Dearborn, Michigan than in his own backyard. And in his concession speech, starts talking about Muslims from San Francisco to Dearborn, Michigan, completely acknowledging the attack was legitimate. The problem was not AIPAC. AIPAC is the big boogeyman now. The left is trying to make it out to be some sinister right-wing group. It tends to support Democrats more than Republicans. It's the American-Israeli Public Affairs Committee. It's a lobbying group for American-Israeli relations. It is an American-funded group. It's not some nefarious, shadowy group that these Democrats get funded by. Like, you know, this is how the Democrats work now. If George Soros gives money to a group, and you pointed out you're anti-Semitic, if AIPAC gives money to a group, well, it's bad. Heads you win, tails you lose. Heads they win, tails you lose. This is the way they're working it. Jared Polis is governor of Colorado. He actually had some words on the defeat of Jamal Bowman, and he's actually right on this.
Jamal Bowman is looking for a new job. The far-left congressman becoming the first member of the squad to get ousted from Congress after losing the Democratic primary to moderate George Latimer in New York's 16th congressional district. Bowman wasn't the only progressive to fall, including these two prominent state lawmakers. They also lost their re-election bids in Denver. And joining us now is Colorado's Democratic governor, Jared Polis. And I know that you took some interest in these races, especially when it comes to the support of Israel. Your reaction this morning to Jamal Bowman losing his seat, as well as these two in Denver.
Well, you know, I never served with Jamal Bowman. I served in Congress for 10 years. I left a little bit before he got there, so I don't know the man personally. I remember Elliot Engel previously had that seat. You know, a lot of politics, whether it's state legislature or Congress, it's really about doing the basics. It's about the house parties. It's about meeting people, attending their birthdays and funerals, and getting to know them. And when members of Congress don't do that work, they're vulnerable to be ousted. And I think in this case, you have a number of incumbents that just didn't put in the work in the neighborhoods, getting to know people, and they'll have a different representative going forward.
But would you agree that their outspokenness against Israel, and in fact, Bowman's completely blaming his loss on AIPAC, the PAC in America that supports Israel, for his loss, as if he never did anything wrong. And he uses the word that AIPAC spent millions of dollars and they brainwashed the constituents of his district.
Well, he does seem unusually obsessed with that topic. I think the people of his district in Bronx and Westchester, just like the people in Colorado, want their elected officials to fight for lower costs, for a strong economy. If you seem obsessed about issues that, of course, people legitimately care about, but they're not the kitchen table issues that are the most important to people, people will say, why are we sending this guy if all he's doing is fighting about an overseas war and not delivering on reducing costs and making our lives easier or our health care less expensive?
Exactly right. And those were the attacks. In fact, those were the attacks made by AIPAC. Listen to this from MSNBC pointing it out.
Even as I've talked to voters, there are some who are like, I don't want to share who I voted for. I don't want my neighbors to know.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
got intense.
It's intense because AIPAC are bullies. AIPAC intimidates people. And my opponent has sided not just with AIPAC, but with Republican billionaires. And because he's been in office so long and because he's been county executive giving people jobs, people are afraid.
You hear Bowman there, again, turn the conversation back towards AIPAC, and it's something he did multiple times in our conversation. And look, we have to point out, AIPAC-aligned groups have spent over $14 million. They're responsible for the bulk of the cash that's been spent on the airwaves here. And most of those ads, although it's a group that is pro-Israel, most of those ads have actually been about the ways that Bowman has voted in Congress in ways that are divergent from the Biden administration. So it's not like those ads themselves are overtly focused on Israel and Gaza, but certainly that's an issue that voters themselves have surfaced here.
Yes, that's exactly right. AIPAC, when it targeted Jamal Bowman, did not target Jamal Bowman for his anti-Semitism. AIPAC, they targeted him over his failure to be a good congressman for his constituents. They did to Jamal Bowman exactly what he did to Elliot Engel, and you would have thought that Jamal Bowman might have learned his lesson, but he didn't. And he walked into the trap. It was exceeding arrogance on his part. And I got to point out as well that the squad itself is doing pretty poorly when it comes to picking candidates. So here's the list. Nina Turner was taken out by moderates in Ohio. Andy Levin in Michigan, Katie Porter in the California Senate race, Uline Niu in New York, Marie Newman in Illinois, Jessica Cisneros in Texas, Shashili Jayapal in Oregon, Jamie McLeod Skinner in Oregon, and now Jamal Bowman. They all lost to the moderate candidates. It's not just them, though. What's so notable here is that on the right, it's increasingly starting to happen as well, where more moderate candidates are rallying together to stop right-wing candidates who are supported by Donald Trump. That happened last night in a South Carolina runoff. It happened in multiple Colorado districts. It happened in Utah. People tend to want to win, and they don't think in suburbia it wins. What's notable about Jamal Bowman is this district is D plus 20. That means that a Democrat can expect to get a 20 points more than a Republican on a bad day. George Latimer is not going to lose to a Republican. He's going to win in November. That district's solidly Democrat. What's notable, however, is that despite being so solidly Democrat, it did not want a fringe member of the squad representing it. It actually wanted someone who could get something done for the district. At the end of the day, local politics still matters most. And Jamal Bowman forgot the lesson he deployed against Elliot Engel in 2020. Now, I got to tell you about Old Glory Bank, and I'm glad to be able to tell you about them. They are in the business of home loans now. You can do business with Old Glory Bank. They're a pro-America, pro-conservative, pro-small business bank. They do VA, conventional, and FHA loans at competitive rates, and they have quick closing times, too. And now when you refer a friend to Old Glory Bank for a home loan and their loan closes by September 1st, they're going to send you $250 and a signed John Rich Old Glory Bank cap. I don't have a John Rich signed one, but I got an Old Glory Bank ball cap. The reward is home ownership, but you get $250 if you refer a friend to Old Glory Bank. And I don't get it. If you all go and get trouble there, they're not paying me money, just so you know. I wish they were, but they're not. But you get a bonus. Old Glory Bank, they do home loans. They do real banking accounts, too, checking and savings. They do mortgages. They do so much more. They're a great bank. They're an innovative bank. They've got great bill pay. They actually are my bank. Actually use them. In fact, I like them so much. They did a round of
investor fundraising. And I bought some shares of Old Glory Bank because I've been so impressed with them. I like bank shares. I got Bank of America. I got Synovus. I got Old Glory Bank shares too. That's how much I like them. They want to stand with you and they want to do loans with you. They're a member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender. NMLS number 834337. The lawyers make us say terms and conditions apply, but go check out oldglorybank.com if you're in the market for a loan or you need a great checking account.
When the world seems crazy, he'll keep you sane. It's the Eric Erickson Show. Want to be on the show? Come on, be on the show. Call Eric now at 877-973-7425.
Welcome. It is Eric Erickson here across the nation. The phone number is 877-973-7425 should you wish to be on the program. Now, it looks like the U.S. Supreme Court is poised to allow abortions and medical emergencies in Idaho. According to Bloomberg News, a copy of the opinion was briefly posted on the court's website before being pulled. Interesting. This hour of the program brought to you by First Liberty Building and Loan. If you're buying a building, build a building. If you need an equipment loan, if you're buying heavy equipment, something like that, you got great credit, they can move quick. They make their own decisions. Reach out to them, firstlibertyga.com, firstlibertyga.com. They want to help your business grow if they can. Good people, then they do make their own decisions. Now, I got to explain to you my yesterday. I got up, my book launch yesterday, You Shall Be As Gods. Thanks to all of you who bought it. It is number one in the history of religion on Amazon.com right now, which is great, although I think probably misclassified it. But nonetheless, it's number one on Amazon. And a lot of positive feedback. A lot of people tagged me, but I got up, started doing radio interviews yesterday morning at 7 a.m. And then I had to pre-record a portion of my show yesterday because I had to do a live hit with Megyn Kelly to talk about my book. And that I'm glad I recorded my whole hour of the show because that short hit with Megyn Kelly, she started talking about stuff and it was an hour. And then I had to finish my show. And after I did my show, 15 minutes later, I had to do an interview with Andrew Sullivan, the political writer, and we started talking, and the next thing I knew, it was 6 o'clock. Talked to him for about 2.5 hours, nonstop, no commercial break. Then I had to run across the street to grab something to eat real quick because then I had to come back and I had to do a bunch of TV hits. It was a very long night. I did not leave my office. I got to my office at 7 o'clock yesterday morning, and I did not leave until 9 o'clock last night. I'm somewhat surprised I have a voice, frankly. It was a very long night, but the book launch was great. The publisher is delighted. More advanced orders for this book than any of their prior books. A great little publisher in New York, and it's taken off. If you would like to order a copy of it, if you text the word data to 33777, you can get a copy of You Shall Be As Gods. I'll send you back the link from Amazon.com. Or you just go to Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Books A Million, wherever. You Shall Be As Gods by Eric Erickson. That's the name of the book. The subtitle is Pagans, Progressives, and the Rise of the Woke Gnostic Left. I wish they had left out the left just so full disclosure, so you're not surprised. This is one of the things Sullivan was surprised about, and Megyn Kelly as well was. The book is about half the problems with the left, half of it's about the left and half of it's about the problems with the right, that both sides are falling to this paganism. And so if you're interested, you can text data to 33777, get the book. The launch was yesterday. It'll show up in about 24 hours from Amazon, depending on your status. We'll be back with The Economist Conspiracy.
It's the Kia Summer Sticker Sales Event, so give your friends something to look at, like a B&B with an ocean view, an endless field of wildflowers, or a sunset that needs no filter. Make this a summer to share and save with a capable Kia SUV or powerful sedan. See your local Kia dealer or visit Kia.com to learn more. Kia, movement that inspires.
Call 800-334-KIA for details. Always drive safely. Sale applies to purchase of specially tagged 2024 vehicles only. Quantities are limited. Must take delivery by 7/8/24.